those who keep the faith. The Ruhar's translated voice stumbled. Oh. It was Emily's turn to grimace. Keepers. We call them keepers. Actually, she smiled and winked, knowing the Ruhar used the same facial expressions. They call themselves keepers. We have less polite names for those idiots.
Ah? Ha ha ha.
On Earth, we have a large bird that does not fly. Perkins struggled with how to describe an ostrich. When it is faced with a predator, it will bury its head in the sand rather than confront the danger. She knew that was a myth, but it made a good point for her story. Those keepers can't deal with the fact that we got suckered by the Kristang, so they cling to their original mission orders. The escort was silent, puzzled by the translation. He pressed a button to replay and listened again.
Major Perkins, I am curious. The strategy you described is not wise for the survival of the bird that is unable to fly. Would not such a bird quickly have gone extinct?
Perkins had to stop herself from rolling her eyes. He had completely missed the point of her story.
Oh, for crying out. What I mean is,
or... The escort's face lit up as he had a thought.
Is there another factor you did not mention? Does the head of this bird emit heat, and the predators on your planet use infrared vision? In that case, such a survival strategy would be quite successful. Although, he paused to touch a finger to his lips,
how would the bird know whether the predator has left the area?
Oh, I... Forget it, I will explain later.
She was relieved that they had reached the door of the administration building, and the escort needed to go in first. Perkins's meeting was with the Ruhar woman she still thought of as the Burgermeister, Deputy Administrator Baterna Logelia. Recent rumors had Logelia soon moving up to Chief Administrator. The current chief was long known to have desired to move back to his home planet. Perkins had developed a very good working relationship with Logelia, and considered that relationship to be one of UNEF's greatest assets on Paradise. The deputy administrator was waiting in her office, her focus on the display in front of her. As soon as Perkins was ushered into the office, Logelia flipped the display closed, rose from her chair, and offered a warm handshake. Perkins could still not decide if Logelia genuinely liked humans, or thought of Perkins's team as her pets.
Major Perkins, did you enjoy your refreshing vacation in the snow? I am sorry there was no opportunity for your team to ski while you were there, she added with a twinkle in her eyes.
It was delightful, thank you, Perkins winked back. I highly recommend the experience to anyone who enjoys frostbite, soul-crushing depression, and boredom. The Burgermeister nodded.
We do appreciate your team's work.
She tapped the tablet on her desk.
The report from the mission leader praised the skill and professionalism of your team highly. Please convey our regards to them for us.
I will. Perkins was mildly surprised to hear the Ruhar mission leader had praised her team. In meetings with Perkins, the Ruhar mission leader had treated humans as small and not very bright children.
I am proud of my team's efforts. We are ready for our next mission.
Baterna plunged ahead, figuring it was best to deliver the bad news right away.
There is, please forgive me if I use the expression incorrectly, good news and bad news on that issue.
That is the correct expression, Perkins responded warily. Traditionally, the bad news is given first.
Ah, I understand. That way the good news coming later takes away the sting of the bad news.
That is the idea, yes.
The bad news, then, is there is much pressure coming from the battle group commander to shut down the activities of your team. The commander is concerned about the operational security risks of including aliens in the process of establishing the projector network.
My team has been restricted to drilling, Perkins protested. All we do is provide access to the projector control center. We do not descend below the surface at all.
That is true. That is, despite the fact that my team reactivated projectors all by ourselves and rescued this planet from a Kristang battle group.
You don't need us to reactivate projectors. We don't need you to reactivate projectors. Perkins knew she risked insulting the deputy administrator.
She judged that risk worthwhile, to remind the Ruhar government who had destroyed a Kristang battle group that had been hanging over their heads.
"Major," Lucellia responded with a quick smile, "Admiral Movalu knows your team performed exceptionally. He also knows that your team acted without the permission or knowledge of our government. You were beyond our control, and admirals do not like anything to be beyond their command and control."
"We are operating under your control now," Perkins said defensively. Lucellia continued as if Perkins had not spoken.
"Admiral Movalu expressed to me his concern that when you were working on your own, your team was acting in the interests of humans. Helping us was only a byproduct of your goal of preventing UNEF from falling under the control of the Kristang."
"That is true," Perkins kept her voice cool. "It is also true that allies often find areas of mutual interest, and we were acting under the direction of a mysterious benefactor, who I suspected was a group of local Ruhar."
"I personally suspect your MB was a rival group of Kristang, but our intelligence agencies do not agree."
The Ruhar intelligence agencies were still intensely searching for the true identity of MB, and to date, they had not a single clue, which made each intelligence agency suspect that MB was working for another agency. Essentially, the intel agencies were all unhelpfully chasing their tails. Perkins nodded silently. After the Kristang battlegroup commander essentially surrendered, Perkins and her team had been interrogated for days by Ruhar. The interrogation had not been rough, but it had not been friendly either. Most of the questions had focused on who their mysterious benefactor was, a subject about which Perkins and her team had nothing but wild guesses. Based on the questions of her Ruhar interrogators, Perkins thought the Ruhar also had absolutely no idea of MB's true identity, and they might never know, which was fine with Emily Perkins. Having a mysterious benefactor was an ace in the hole if Perkins was ever able to work with them, or him, or her, again. But Turner continued.
"When my government, the federal government, first learned about Admiral Kikrondo's battlegroup being destroyed, they were very unhappy, because the federal government did not want Gitanu. They wanted to trade this planet for something more valuable, something easier and cheaper to defend. It was only later when we found that Elder Power Tap that the federal government decided we should keep Gitanu for ourselves. The federal government does not consider that you did any favors for us, so we do not owe you anything in return."
"We have not asked for favors," Perkins responded in what she hoped was an even tone.
"We are working to provide security for this planet under your control. You are now, as you said, acting under our orders. However, if you decide that we are doing something which is not favorable to humans, you might decide to do something that acts against the interests of my people."
She paused as a very large dropship revved up its engines and accelerated down the runway, rumbling faster and faster. That type of dropship was called a whale by the humans. The name referred to a very large aquatic mammal that lived in the oceans on the humans' home planet. Unlike the derisive names of buzzard, chicken, or vulture humans gave to Ruhar combat aircraft, Materna had been told whale was a sign of respect for the gigantic dropship. The office complex buildings had vibration-canceling technology embedded in floors, walls, and ceilings. Still, Materna could feel her desk trembling faintly under her fingertips, so she waited until the noise from the dropship faded. Perkins did not like the direction the conversation had taken.
"UNEF has pledged loyalty to the Ruhar. This was done in our self-interest, as you said, but also because we have come to believe the Kristang are our true enemy. On that issue, our interests are perfectly aligned."
The conversation could uselessly go back and forth forever. The Ruhar might never fully trust humans.
"Administrator, the bad news is that Admiral Movalu wants to terminate my team's participation in the projector missions. You said you also had good news?"
"I do have good news, or news I think is good. I have been able to persuade the Chief Administrator to allow your team to be assigned one last mission. Last, because there are few projectors remaining to be activated. Your team might be assigned other missions in the future, however,
this will likely be your last involving the projector network.
Let me guess, Perkins said with a wry smile. We are going to the South Pole this time.
Why not, she thought. Humans would only be assigned to missions the Ruhar did not want.
No,
but Turner winked. I have arranged an all-inclusive tropical vacation for you and your team.
Seriously? Perkins didn't know if the other woman was joking.
Seriously. Your people call our planet paradise. I think this area of Gitanu is as close to a tropical paradise as you will find on our fair planet. Here.
But Turner opened her display and turned it so Perkins could see. It was a map of the far side of paradise. Much of one hemisphere was an ocean substantially larger than the Pacific on Earth. The hemisphere held chains of islands, some large and some small. But Turner zoomed the display on a tiny dot south of the equator.
To be a fully effective mechanism for planetary defense, the projector network must provide overlapping coverage of the entire sky. Because so much of Gitanu's surface is ocean, the Kristang had to install projectors on some rather small and isolated islands. This is one. To perform this mission, your team pilots will need training to fly a special, long-range version of the aircraft you call a buzzard. Also, they will need to qualify to perform in-flight refueling.
That will not be a problem, Perkins declared. She had complete confidence in her two pilots.
You are certain? Baterna asked, wary the human commander may be boasting.
Lieutenant Strebik performed a precision hover while hovering a drill rig without any training. Lieutenant Bonsu was trusted by your own air command to fly a Dobra gunship.
True. Will you accept this assignment?
Yes, Perkins said without hesitation.
I have only one question.
If we perform well, will that help to change your government's mind about resettling UNEF in southern Lemuria?
Unfortunately, no.
But if we perform poorly, that will reflect badly on all humans?
Yes, also unfortunately, Baterna confirmed.
Shit, Perkins said to herself. The only thing worse would be for humans to be excluded from the mission, voluntarily or through a Ruhar ban on human participation.
Thank you for your honesty.
Baterna gave back a sad smile.
I regret to add that the Ruhar commander of this mission strongly objected to humans being involved. You will need to be, as you say, on your toes.
Still, she zoomed the display in farther so the island could be seen as a lush green dot fringed by a white beach in a dazzlingly blue ocean.
At least being on this tropical island will be pleasant for your team.
Compared to our last mission, this should be a vacation.
Good. Major Perkins, I have a favor to request of you. It will benefit you. So I hope you will agree.
Perkins wondered with alarm what the request could be.
What is this favor?
I have been trying to arrange a liaison officer for your team, someone to work directly with you and act as a buffer between yourself and the mission commander. It has been difficult to find someone to act as liaison. It is not a popular assignment. What I have arranged is for one of my nephews.
Nephew? Did that translate correctly?
My brother's son.
Nephew is the correct term.
Good. My nephew is a cadet attending a military academy. He is in his first year and is here on leave. He is 13 of your years old.
Oh, great, Perkins thought. Fantastic. We're going to be babysitters.
She smiled as broadly as she could manage.
Administrator, we would be very pleased for your nephew to join my team.
I have one question. While he is with us, he will be under my command?
That can be arranged, Baterna nodded.
Thank you, Major. My nephew is very eager for this assignment.
I must, she smiled quickly, tell you, my nephew is young, and even for his age he is considered somewhat socially awkward. Please do not take offense if he says the wrong thing. He means well.
Doubly great, Perkins groaned inside.
I am sure he will be a great asset to my team.
What else could she say? While Major Perkins was meeting with the Burgermeister, and Irene and Derek were trying to get replacement parts for their Buzzard, Jesse, Dave, and Shauna were cleaning their well-used aircraft. They had been flying and living in the Buzzard for weeks, and even the three men agreed the cabin of their ship was getting funky. Jesse and Dave were carrying bags of trash across the landing pad to a dumpster behind a hangar when Dave saw something that stopped him in his tracks.
"Holy crap, dude, check it out!"
Dave nudged Jesse, pointing toward a hangar a few rows past where their Buzzard was parked.
"What? I... Damn! What the hell is he doing here?"
Jesse exclaimed.
"The Major did say the hamsters had brought in sleepers for a briefing or something before they leave the planet. Errant Eric," he used their derisive name for Eric Koblenz, "must be one of them, right?"
"There's nothing right about him, amigo," Jesse muttered. "Something's wrong about him in the head."
"You can say that about all those sleepers."
Dave spat on the tarmac, or whatever material the Ruhar used for the parking aprons and runways at the airbase.
"Hey, Jesse, let's ditch this trash and go talk to him."
"Why?" Jesse snorted.
"So he can tell us we're traitors. That would be a waste of time. Besides, if he calls me a traitor to my face again, I might have to punch him in his face, and Major Perkins told us to stay out of trouble."
Jesse was sure any of the keepers would love an opportunity to get Jesse or Dave in trouble with their Ruhar hosts.
"Look, the guy is a certified asshole," Dave agreed.
"But you think he really wants to go off-world with the lizards? His problem is he's stupid, and he listens to people he should stay away from."
"You're serious?" Jesse asked, fairly astonished.
"Yeah, man. It will be our good deed for the day."
"Good deed for the freaking year, you mean? We already destroyed a Krestang battle group. I don't need any more good deeds on my record, thank y'all very much,"
Jesse declared. But Dave could tell he was hesitating.
"Right. You in?"
"You promise to hold me back if I get the urge to punch him.
You promise the same for me?"
"Oh, hell," Jesse sighed.
"Okay, let's do it. No need to punch him anyways. The freaking lizards are sure to get his ass killed up there if they don't kill him themselves."
They dumped the trash and hurried toward where Eric Koblenz was standing awkwardly in the midst of what Jesse guessed was 100 keepers.
"Ski, wait." He grabbed Dave's arm.
"You really want to persuade this asshole not to throw his life away?"
"Somebody should," Dave nodded.
"In that case, I reckon talking to him is a waste of time. He ain't gonna listen to us. We're traitors, remember? Even if he agrees with us, he'll still go off-world out of stupid pride."
"Yeah, so? You got a better idea?"
"I do."
Jesse held up his Z-phone and selected a photo.
"See that officer? With the bandages on his face and the arm splint? I think that's Captain Chisholm. He's the only survivor of the raid on that projector site the Ruhar were digging up in Lemuria."
"Shit, that's him?"
Dave gaped and looked between Jesse's Z-phone and the officer.
"I think you're right, it is him."
Major Perkins's team had heard about the failed raid, in which the 6 Krestang and 50 human attackers had been killed or wounded, with the only survivor being Captain Chisholm. At the time, Perkins and her team had been rather busy flying around reactivating projector sites under the direction of Emby, so they hadn't paid much attention to the incident. They approached the Ruhar guards around Chisholm and requested permission to speak with their fellow human. One of the Ruhar guards recognized Dave and Jesse and must have been grateful for their having destroyed a Krestang battle group because she waved them forward.
"Speak quickly," she advised. "You will be leaving soon."
"Captain Chisholm," Dave asked as he gave a salute.
"Sir, could we speak with you?" The captain returned the salute awkwardly. His right arm was not broken, but he had enough tissue damage in the shoulder joint that raising that arm was painful.
"Specialist," he began saying to Dave, then turned his attention to Jesse, who had not saluted.
"You don't recognize the uniform, soldier?"
he asked harshly. Jesse tapped the UNEF patch on his own uniform.
"You're the one who left the service."
Chisholm's jaw set angrily.
"The United States Army made me a captain specialist. UNEF HQ betrayed our assigned mission. I didn't."
Jesse leaned forward into Chisholm's face.
"You think..."
Dave put a hand on Jesse's chest and gently pushed him back. Don't antagonize the man, Jesse. We need his help.
Help? Chisholm was taken aback.
You want to join us? He asked skeptically.
No, sir, Dave explained.
We want to ask your help with... You're not...
I know you too. Recognition dawned on Chisholm's face.
You're on Major Perkins's team.
He almost gasped with shock.
You destroyed a battle group of our allies and you are asking me for help?
The lizards are not our allies, Jesse protested.
Coulter, Chisholm peered at the name tag on Jesse's uniform top. If you came here to argue with me, this is going to be a short conversation.
No, sir, Dave assured the keeper officer. Jesse, shut up and let me talk.
Before Dave could continue, Chisholm grimaced as he shifted his left arm. The sling was causing pain, and no matter how many times he adjusted it, the arm throbbed after a minute.
The two of you assume all of us keepers are stupid, or we're weak, that we either don't see the truth about the Kristang, or we can't face the truth, so we cling to a comforting lie. Is that about it?
Sounds about right to me.
How about you, Ski?
Jesse replied, arms across his chest.
I said not to antagonize him, Cornpone, Dave pleaded.
Captain, we have different ideas about what we should be doing here now that we've lost contact with Earth. You have your opinion, and we have
opinion.
Chisholm shook his head in a dismissive gesture.
This is not a mere matter of opinion, Chaika. The difference between you and me.
Chisholm looked at the keepers standing under the shade of the hangar.
Between you and us. As you believe those fortune cookies are real, right? You think the info we found written into food packaging came from Earth? You think those messages are the straight truth from Earth, and that the Kristang back home have conquered our home planet and are abusing humanity?
Yeah, so? Jesse still had his arms firmly across his chest.
Only an idiot would...
We believe them, sir, Dave interrupted, pleading with his eyes for Jesse to shut the hell up.
The difference is I don't, Chisholm said with conviction.
We don't. The Kristang rescued our planet. The Ruhar attacked us, not the Kristang. We believe those fortune cookies are disinformation planted by the Ruhar to drive a wedge between us and the Kristang and to sow dissension in the ranks of UNEF.
He laughed bitterly.
And it worked, didn't it?
How the hell could the Ruhar have planted messages inside food packages that came from Earth aboard Kristang starships?
Jesse asked in a taunting tone.
I don't know, but the hamsters have technology beyond our comprehension. Can you say for certain, with absolute certainty, that the Ruhar could not have done it?
Jesse's defiant expression belied his uncertainty.
You can't prove something didn't happen. It makes no sense.
My point, soldier, Chisholm said calmly, is the difference between UNEF and us keepers of the faith isn't stubbornness or stupidity, it's a matter of judgment. Tell me, what would you do if you thought the fortune cookies were fakes, planted by the hamsters?
He addressed the question to Dave rather than Jesse.
Then shit, sir, I guess I'd be one of you.
Dave did not like the turn the conversation had taken. Was the difference between UNEF and keepers really only a matter of judgment, of whether to trust the Ruhar more than the Kristang? Was he the one stubbornly clinging to the UNEF chain of command rather than thinking for himself?
But we don't believe that.
I mean...
Jesse shook his head, angry at Chisholm for trying to confuse him.
We do believe the fortune cookies are honest to God messages from Earth.
Yeah, Jesse, but...
He's right, Dave said hesitantly.
What?
Hell, what if we found out the hamsters faked the whole thing?
Oh, fuck. I've had my mind blown too many times already. You're on his side now, Ski?
Jesse asked, hurt.
No, Pone. All I'm saying is, if we thought that the fortune cookies were fakes, we wouldn't be helping the Ruhar.
I guess, Jesse replied, disappointed by his friend.
There's something else.
Chisholm knew when to press an advantage.
The fact is, we aren't sure the fortune cookies are fakes.
We don't know, and neither do you, not for certain.
You switched your loyalty to the Ruhar because you think the Ruhar will treat UNEF better than the Kristang will. Am I right about that?
So would you if you opened your eyes, Jesse retorted.
I agree with you, Chisholm said simply.
Wait.
What?
Jesse sputtered, disarmed.
I agree the Ruhar will treat humans here better than the Kristang would have if the Kristang had retaken this planet. The difference between you and me, Chisholm's eyes narrowed, is I'm not thinking only of myself. We came out here to defend Earth, to protect the billions of people back home. Maybe the Kristang have betrayed us. His injuries prevented him from shrugging with his shoulders, so he used his eyebrows instead. I accept the fact that I can't do anything to change the situation. What I can do is not give the Kristang any more reason to think of humans as untrustworthy. Everything we do out here reflects on humanity as a whole and directly affects Earth. I have a family back home. To protect them as best I can, I am not going to give the Kristang a reason to hurt my family back home. I'm putting the billions of people on Earth before my own selfish interests. Jesse wished he had tossed away the trash and gone directly back to the buzzard. You want me to do something for you? Chisholm addressed Dave. Then answer a question. What do you think will happen when the Kristang on Earth find out a group of humans destroyed a Kristang battle group? Did the two of you ever think about the consequences to our people on Earth, or did you only think of what would be best for UNEF here? The lizards on Earth won't find out about that, Dave stated confidently. The wormhole to Earth is shut down. The lizards there have no idea what is happening out here. Chisholm shook his head slowly, with pity for Dave. You're sure about that? The Ruhar told us, and the Kristang pretty much has admitted it, Dave retorted. And you are willing to bet the lives of your families back on Earth. That wormhole shut down suddenly. What happens if the wormhole reopens tomorrow? Shit, Jesse said with disgust. What if Santa Claus takes us all back to Earth in his sleigh tomorrow? I'm not going to convince you today. Chisholm looked Jesse directly in the eyes. I want you to think about it. With the corner of one eye, he saw Dave's head nod slightly. What do you want from me? Dave was then unsure what he wanted, so he looked to Jesse. What Jesse wanted to do right then was walk away, but seeing as talking with Captain Chisholm had been his idea, he plunged ahead. There's a guy over there. Jesse jerked a thumb back over his shoulder. Eric Oblentz, he's a keeper. He was in our company, then he lived in our village for a while. Until Eric pulled up stakes and moved to one of the unofficial keeper villages. If you ask me, Eric doesn't care about whether the fortune cookies are real or not. He doesn't think that deep. We had a sergeant in our village, a rabid... Jesse realized using that word was not the best way to get Chisholm to help. A dedicated keeper. This sergeant worked on Eric, and Eric became a keeper because of that. Eric wasn't with us in Nigeria. He was a replacement brought in after we rotated back stateside. He's always had a chip on his shoulder about not having been in Nigeria and not ever having been in combat. Even on Paradise, when the Ruhar raided and then took back control of the planet, Eric had not seen any action. Captain, Eric is a scared, stupid kid who thinks he has something to prove. He's throwing his life away. Chisholm looked over Jesse's shoulder to the cluster of people standing under the shade of the hangar. Until that day, he had not met Eric Koblenz, and only knew of him from news on the Z-Phone network. What do you want me to do? He won't listen to us, Dave explained. We were hoping you could talk to him. Chisholm's eyebrows raised in amused surprise. You want me to persuade one of my fellow keepers that I'm wrong, and he shouldn't come with us? Now that Chisholm said it, Jesse thought it was indeed a dumb request. Look, sir, if he's really sure of what he's doing, then he can go with my blessing. But if he's doing this because it doesn't matter, Chisholm stated. All of us, he pointed to the assembled keepers, have fought against the Ruhar or acted in a manner hostile to the Ruhar or UNEF. Eric never fired a shot, but he did participate in a raid that planned to capture weapons from a UNEF security patrol, then use those weapons against the Ruhar. The Ruhar intend to hold us in prison for the rest of our lives. Your friend may not be sure why he joined the Keepers of the Faith, but he is sure that going off-world with the Kristang is a better option than life in prison. Shit, Jesse breathed, deflated. He's not our friend, Dave said with a sad frown. The guy's an asshole. He's a fellow soldier, and you're concerned about him. Chisholm clapped a hand on Dave's shoulder.
I admire that. Chaika, Coulter, think about what I said. We came out here to protect Earth, not to make a better life for ourselves.
He nodded as the Ruhar guards gestured for him to come with them.
I have to go.
For what it's worth, sir, Jesse snapped a very quick salute.
Vaya con Dios.
You too, soldier. If we meet again, I hope it is under better circumstances.
Chisholm walked away while Cornpone and Ski stood riveted in place.
Hell, that didn't go the way I planned, Jesse muttered. I am a freaking idiot.
You think he's right? Dave wondered uncertainly.
Not about being a keeper. I mean, is he right that if we thought or found out that those fortune cookies were all a hamster trick, would we be on his side?
Shit.
Jesse shook his head angrily.
He liked things in life to be simple black and white. Captain Chisholm had complicated a subject that should have been starkly simple.
If the Ruhar have been lying to us all along, then we are well and truly royally fucked, Ski. Because for damn sure, the lizards are no friends of ours.
Chapter 5. As they walked back to their buzzard, a truck pulled up, and Major Perkins got out. Jesse and Dave broke into a trot and reached the bottom of the ramp as Perkins did.
Trash run, ma'am, Jesse explained as he looked in dismay at the two new bags of trash an annoyed-looking Shauna had packed while they were uselessly arguing with Chisholm.
Did the Burgermeister say anything interesting?
They all by then called the deputy administrator Burgermeister. Perkins had told them the Ruhar woman was fond of that nickname.
Yes, she told me the commander of our Arctic vacation reported we performed well, and I am to congratulate the team. I'll tell our pilots later. More importantly, we have another mission, and it's not the Arctic again.
Perkins did not mention the upcoming mission might be the very last time humans were allowed to do anything other than farming on Paradise.
We're going a quarter around the planet to a projector site on a tropical island. It's going to be a long flight, so the Ruhar are giving us a special long-range buzzard.
A tropical island?
Woohoo!
Shauna exulted.
Should we pack swimsuits, ma'am?
Frolicking in the ocean was something Perkins had not inquired about. There were dangerous predators in the oceans of Paradise, but swimming close to shore might be safe. She would like her team to be able to enjoy quality downtime after they drilled a tunnel down to the projector and the Ruhar technicians were working to reactivate it.
That is a good question, Jarrett. I will ask our new Ruhar liaison.
Liaison? Jesse asked.
Who's that?
Perkins explained.
We are all going to be on our very best behavior around our guest. The deputy administrator stuck her neck out for us, and she's asking a personal favor on behalf of her nephew. If this mission goes well, it may help his career as a cadet to have worked with us. If we screw something up, he'll catch part of the blowback, and so will his aunt, and the stink will get all over us again.
Shauna looked distinctly unhappy.
This is not just a babysitting assignment, Major.
Shauna knew that if there was any babysitting to be done, the two female officers were, of course, not going to do it, and Jesse and Dave would assume babysitting was a woman's job, which would mean Shauna inevitably getting stuck with the task.
No, Perkins made a slashing motion with one hand. Absolutely not. The Burgermeister made that clear to me. We could use a liaison officer, especially one who is well connected, she added hopefully. She did say her nephew is a little awkward. I hope that means he's a normal Ruhar of his age. You'll receive a full briefing packet when...
She noticed the pained and hurt expression on Dave's face.
Chaika, is something wrong?
Dave looked at Jesse, who nodded.
Ma'am, when we were dumping trash, we...
Well, Dave explained the mostly one-sided conversation they had with Captain Chisholm. While he was talking, he glanced at Shauna, embarrassed to appear so weak, so uncertain of himself.
I was just thinking, ma'am, that Chisholm might be right. That if the fortune cookies are fakes, we've been all wrong about helping the Ruhar. Shooting up that battle group might have been the wrong thing to do.
Captain Chisholm is right about that, Perkins replied, to the surprise of Dave and Jesse. Then she cocked her head. People like Chisholm know they have to wrap their load of crap around a tiny kernel of truth to hold it together. Yeah, I agree that if the fortune cookies were planted by the Ruhar, then maybe we shouldn't have helped MB destroy that battle group. I'll tell you this for certain. The fortune cookies are not fakes. They included multiple private authentication codes given to UNEF commanders before we left Earth. Because I was an intel back then, I received a personal message from myself in a fortune cookie. It was supposedly from my mother, and one thing she said was her dog had knocked a molasses bottle onto the kitchen floor, and the corners of her kitchen floor were still a sticky mess weeks later. That message wasn't from my mother, it was a code that I told UNEF Command to send to authenticate messages. The rest of the message contained details of how lizards were fucking over our home planet. That bit about molasses was known only to me, and UNEF Command on Earth. No one else. Unless the Ruhar were using magic, no way could they have known that. The idea of the Ruhar planting the fortune cookies assumes they somehow got past Kristang security and Theranin security and altered the packaging on food that was loaded into Kristang containers on Earth. That makes zero sense. Perkins shook her head. If the Ruhar wanted to screw with us, they could have planted DVDs or thumb drives or something and faked messages that way. Makes sense, Dave mumbled quietly. I'm sorry, ma'am. Emily Perkins nodded with sympathy. Sometimes she forgot how damned young her soldiers were. Fanatics like Chisholm prey on people's uncertainties, and they know exactly how to manipulate people they want to recruit, she said, thinking Chisholm would have made a good intel officer. And Chisholm is dead wrong anyway. He said he's going with the Kristang so they will have less of a reason to oppress our home planet? That is pure 100% bullshit. You know what we call giving in to a bully so he won't hurt you as much? Appeasement. The United States military doesn't do appeasement. It never works. What Chisholm should be doing is what we're doing, building a relationship with a real ally. We don't need to play nice with the Kristang. We need to kick them in the teeth and chase them the hell off our home planet. We need help from the Ruhar to do that. Us helping Emmy destroy that battle group was the right thing to do. It told the lizards there are consequences to fucking with humanity. Dave straightened up. Everything Major Perkins said made perfect sense, and more importantly, it felt right. Maybe that was why Emily Perkins was a major. Yes, ma'am. I'm clear about it now. Hoo-ah, Jesse said, and bumped fists with Dave. What's next, ma'am? Perkins looked around. We unload all our gear from our stolen buzzard. The Ruhar security forces were still sore about that subject, but they had allowed Perkins and her team to keep flying the aircraft. And while they had been using it, the aircraft had acquired dents, scratches, and minor broken bits and pieces from carrying a heavy drill rig that barely fit in the cargo compartment. She grinned. We wouldn't get much for trading this thing in, I suppose. Good news is the Ruhar are allowing us to swap it for a new model. We'll be flying in a special long-range buzzard for our next mission. Before we turn this one over to them, we clean it, scrub it top to bottom, so the Ruhar ground crew has less to complain about. Cleaning the buzzard was a public relations gesture. Perkins was sure the Ruhar would overhaul the aircraft top to bottom. This Ruhar liaison we're getting, she rolled her eyes, will be arriving this afternoon. We'll need to have someone with this buzzard at all times until he shows up. Dave was by himself in the buzzard when there was a knock on the buzzard's composite skin near the open back ramp. Hello? It was a woman's voice. Dave's head spun around and he bumped into a structural frame. He had been cleaning nooks and crannies, getting the buzzard ready to be returned to the Ruhar. What? Oh, he added in a low voice. Wow. Hi. His voice uplifted to end in a nervous squeak. It was a woman. A real, live, human woman. Attractive, with short, light blonde hair. And best of all, her French Army infantry uniform indicated she was an enlisted caporal, not an officer. Before realizing what he was doing, he nervously ran a hand through his hair, smearing lubricating oil through his hair and on his forehead. Specialist Chaika?
the woman asked with a bemused smile and a charming accent. Dave was instantly head over heels in love.
Yeah?
He frantically looked around for a towel, not finding one close by. He stuck out a hand.
Dave Chaika.
She looked at his oil-covered hand.
Oh, Dave caught her meaning. Give me a...
He dug around in the toolbox until he located a clean rag and scrubbed his hands as best he could. Probably best not to offer a handshake anyway.
Sorry about that. How can I help you, Caporal?
He checked her name tag.
Bardot?
I was sent here to bring someone to the flight operations building. Your new Ruhar liaison officer is there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes, that is great. The others, Major Perkins, will be back here and...
Dave forgot what he said after that. It was a blur of babbling nonsense. He might have complimented Bardot on her hair or something else about her appearance, although her baggy fatigues likely prevented much opportunity for him to embarrass himself in that direction. He might have bragged that he was on the team that destroyed a Kristang battlegroup, just in case she wasn't aware of that widely known fact. He might have suggested they get together for lunch. It is possible that a real, normal boy-girl date might have been proposed. About the only thing Dave was certain of is that he didn't get on his knees and beg her to please, please not leave.
Dave, you are a nice gay.
She interrupted him when he finally took a breath and let her speak, pronouncing the last word as gee.
It is, I like women.
She tried to let him down gently.
Of course you're a lesbian,
Dave said with disgust, rolling his eyes and pounding his fist together.
What is that supposed to mean?
She asked, her friendly expression vanishing in an instant.
Because I am in the military? Or because I have short hair?
She demanded as she ran a hand through her bob cut.
Many women have...
No, no,
Dave waved his hands frantically.
All I meant is, of course you don't like men, because that is just the kind of rotten freaking luck I have.
Look, there's not many women on this entire planet. Instead of staying in Lemuria where I might meet someone, I've been flying around the planet in a buzzard. We have three women on our team. Two are officers, and one of them we think is hooking up with another officer. Then there's Shauna, and she's with Jesse. Here we are at a Ruhar air base, and I finally meet a woman. And you don't like men. My life totally sucks.
Your life sucks, she said acidly. How do you think I feel? I'm on a planet with very few women, and the women here all have their choice of men. If you think you have a tough time meeting women who might be interested in you, imagine how it is for me.
Oh, shit. Dave's face fell, stricken. Hey, I'm sorry.
He awkwardly offered her a fist bump, and to his relief, she responded.
I feel you. I mean...
I know what you meant that time, she said with a reassuring smile.
Thanks.
If he could have melted right through the floor and disappeared, he would have.
Listen. It's just that... Hey, Dave.
Shauna rescued him by popping her head in the side door.
Do you have...
Oh, hi. Who's your friend? Caporal Giselle Bardot. You are Shauna?
She guessed.
I am here to bring your team to meet the new liaison officer.
There he is.
Bardot announced, pointing to a young Ruhar walking toward them. From the right, Major Perkins was also headed toward the alien. They met at about the same time. Although young, as a Ruhar he was still tall, already as tall as Dave. His face had not filled out yet, making his incisor teeth even more prominent, giving him an awkward, even goofy look to the humans. Shauna had to remind herself that this Ruhar was an advanced, genetically enhanced being compared to humans.
Hello, Miss Bardot,
he waved enthusiastically at the French woman.
I am Nerd Dandurf,
he said to the group in general with a smile that displayed his large front incisors even more prominently.
Nerd Dandurf? Dave guessed.
Dandurf,
Giselle corrected him.
Oh, Dandurf. I am Dave Chaika.
He stuck out a hand before remembering most Ruhar did not like touching lowly humans. Nert shook his hand vigorously, squeezing hard enough to make Dave wince.
You are the one your fellows call Ski?
Yes, Dave agreed, taken back by the Ruhar's knowledge.
You must be Major Perkins.
Nert snapped a proper Ruhar salute, which was touching two fingers of the left hand to his cheek. Perkins returned the salute in U.S. Army fashion.
I am pleased to meet you, Cadet Dandurf.
Nert made a slight bow.
I am honored to be part of your team, Major Perkins. Your exploits,
he paused to see if that word translated correctly,
are legendary already.
We simply did our duty, Perkins said humbly.
Your team destroyed a battle group.
His face reflected both awe and hero worship.
While my people were, I think the expression is, sitting around with our thumbs up our asses?
Perkins could not help laughing at his goofy grin.
We were presented an opportunity and we made the most of it. You are too modest, Major Perkins.
Nert's expression turned serious.
You are Specialist Jarrett?
He asked Shauna. Shauna Jarrett, yes. I'm pleased to meet you, Cadet Dandurf.
Please, call me Nert,
he asked, unaware what his name sounded like to American ears. Jesse hustled out of the flight operations building, arriving just as Nert finished speaking.
Hi,
Jesse stuck out a hand.
I am Jesse Coulter.
Oh, Specialist Coulter?
Nert's eyes lit up with delight.
Yes, you are the male person who is knocking boots with Specialist Jarrett.
Nert smiled, pleased to know so much about the team of humans he would be working with. Shauna gasped and shot a hurt look at Jesse.
Hey, Jesse protested quickly. I didn't say anything. Listen, Shauna and I are not...
He froze. Everyone on the team knew he and Shauna had a relationship. He couldn't deny they were involved.
We're not doing anything with our boots.
He thought that was a safely neutral thing to say.
Oh.
Nert was puzzled.
I understood the human term knocking boots to be a reference to mating rituals. That did confuse me. I do not see why boots would be involved. I thought human genitals were located,
he pointed to his crotch,
rather than on your feet.
Yes,
Jesse cut him off, mortified at the turn the conversation had taken.
Ah,
Nert nodded.
Boots, then, are an aid in pleasurable copulation.
He asked, his face displaying complete innocence.
No.
Jesse's face was beet red, and Shauna was hiding her face behind her hands in horrified shock.
We don't,
He glanced from Perkins's bemused expression to Dave, who was trying not to choke from laughing.
We don't use boots. It's an express...
Perhaps the human male mates with the boot rather than with the female,
Nert pointed to Jesse.
Although your boots are large, I did not think you were so well endowed, Cadet Dandurf.
Major Perkins had to halt the discussion before she burst into laughter at the social awkwardness of their new alien liaison officer. Your knowledge of human language and social customs is impressive. She was not lying, except that Nert's knowledge of social customs had some major gaps.
Who taught you about these, social customs?
Nert's face beamed.
Two very nice men from your American 3rd Infantry helped me. I learned much from them.
Uh-huh, Perkins sighed.
Coulter, Chaika, give Cadet Dandurf a tour of our buzzard and find out what else those jokers from the 3rd mistaught him. Jarrett, you're with me. I think the conversation they need is guys only.
The Krestang Special Forces Unit designated 39 Commando, who previously had disguised themselves as the 134th Operational Support Company, struggled to pull the camouflage netting off their Jacuar stealth dropship during a driving rainstorm at night. At the end of the desperate ground battles to control the planet's projector network, the cold-hearted commandos had lured the Ruhar in to wipe out an unwitting group of Krestang soldiers who had been used as decoys so that the real 39 Commando could slip away undetected. Since that battle, they had huddled in the dense jungle of the southern continent, living in and around their Jacuar, waiting for an opportunity that would be worth sacrificing the elite commando unit. A few hours earlier, the commando leader had found the opportunity they had been looking for.
We have a chance to hit the Ruhar very badly, and the timing is fortuitous, the commando leader told his squad leaders as they waited for the Jacuar to complete powering up for flight. It will be a long, slow flight.
The Jacquard dropship had been designed for maximum stealth, intended for inserting special operation teams behind enemy lines. Exactly the sort of missions 39 Commando had been trained for. The Jacquard could wrap itself in a sophisticated stealth field. Its heat signature could be temporarily masked by dumping waste heat into an internal heat tank, and it was sleekly aerodynamic. Its flight still disturbed the atmosphere it flew through. The Jacquard had special fans at the rear of its wings and tail, fans which smoothed out the airflow to return the surrounding air to its original state, whatever that was. All those features, which significantly compromised the Jacquard's combat capability, could still not allow the dropship to remain undetected if it flew too fast. So, for stealth operations, the Jacquard flew low and slowly.
"Most of the flights will be over deep ocean, where the Ruha do not have a ground sensor network. We can increase speed there."
The leader pointed to a map on the display.
"This is our objective."
One of the squad leaders, bolder than the others, sniffed in a Kristang expression of surprise.
"That is our target. There is nothing there worth our time."
"No."
The leader's lips curled. He appreciated a certain amount of boldness in his squad leaders.
"This is our objective. Our target is elsewhere."
The squad leader perhaps regretted his earlier boldness, aware the commando leader was playing with him.
"Esteemed leader, I do not understand."
"Our objective," the leader adjusted the display for a closer view, "is where we will find the means to strike the enemy. We will strike a blow the enemy will remember for a very long time. And we will wipe the smug smiles off their well-satisfied, furry little faces."
Ski lifted clothes out of his duffel bag. He needed to remove his cold-weather gear and pack for a tropical climate. Looking at the battered canvas, he considered how far the duffel bag had traveled with him. To Nigeria and back, to Camp Alpha, and now Paradise. This was the third planet the bag had been on. While Dave himself had lost weight on a restricted diet and he had picked some scars since he left Earth, he was better off than the duffel bag. If he had to stitch up another rip in a seam, he may as well use the duffel bag's canvas for scrap and try to get a replacement. As he removed items from the duffel bag and stacked them carefully on a jump seat, a small vacuum-packed clear plastic pouch fell to the deck. Before Ski could grab it, Jesse picked it up and examined it.
"What is this?"
Dave snatched it from his friend's hand.
"It's my lucky underwear."
Jesse, of course, did not question there being such a thing as lucky underwear.
"How are they lucky?"
"They're not. Not yet."
"Huh?"
Ski held up the sealed plastic pouch.
"This is my one clean pair of underwear on this whole planet. If I ever think there is any chance that I might get lucky, I'm making sure to be wearing these."
"Oh, I got you," Jesse said, holding his fist out for a bump. Dave returned the gesture. "The shorts I'm wearing right now have so many holes, the only reason they haven't dissolved is the cotton molecules are holding hands."
"So they're just starting to get broken in?"
Jesse grinned.
"To you and me, yeah. And girls don't understand that. If you get that far and a girl sees you've got a ratty pair of shorts, she may change her mind. No way am I taking that chance."
"I hear you." Jesse held out a fist and Dave bumped it.
"When you're done packing, we need to educate our new friend, Nert. He's up in the cockpit playing with the flight simulator."
"Good. That's good, Nert. You got it. That was perfect," Jesse praised their new liaison officer.
"Thank you, Specialist Coulter," Nert said,
beaming a buck-toothed smile with pride.
"Nert, call me Jesse," he offered.
That was less awkward than Specialist Coulter, and would hopefully prevent Dave from suggesting the Ruhar refer to him as Cornpone. Jesse didn't mind his team using that nickname, but he didn't like it for general usage.
"Call me Dave," Ski agreed. "Hey, Nert, now we'll show you how to offer a gesture of praise for people who have done a particularly good job."
Nert tilted his head, listening intently to the translation through his earpiece.
"People who have performed a task with notable effort or skill?"
Yeah.
Dave looked at Jesse. Nert sounded like a nerd partly because the translator made everyone's language awkward.
"Now, look,
You hold your left arm in front of you like this. Now, don't hug it to your chest. Hold it away from you a bit. Then you bring your right arm up with your hand outside your left forearm. Right. Pump your right fist up and down. That's it.
Dave struggled to keep a straight face as Nerd happily performed an up-yours gesture.
Uh-huh. Up and down like that. When you do it like that, you are showing your enthusiasm for the good job someone did.
Jesse broke into a coughing fit to mask the laughter he could no longer contain.
Thank you, Dave and Jesse,
Nert said with a slight nod and bow the Ruhar used to express gratefulness. A group of three humans were crossing between hangars 50 meters away. Nert called out to them.
Hello!
He shouted without using the translator and grinned as he used the friendly gesture he had just learned.
Good job! What the hell?
One of the three guys stared at Nert. Jesse held up his hands, and Dave took a step away from Nert, twirling a finger near his head to indicate Nert was crazy.
Hey,
the guy shouted back, returning the gesture.
Up yours too, buddy. Thank you,
Nert kept pumping his fist up and down.
Good job.
Okay, that's enough for now, Nert. You don't want to overdo it, Jesse advised, gently pushing the alien's fist downward.
Dave was almost doubled over, convulsed with laughter.
I understand, Nert said happily. What else can I...
Just then, Perkins came around the side of the buzzard with Shauna right behind her. Nert's face lit up.
Major Perkins! Good job!
No!
Dave and Jesse almost tackled Nert in their haste to stop him from giving his newly learned gesture to their commanding officer. Perkins stopped short.
What is going on here?
Dave stammered. We were,
He shot a pleading look at Jesse, who was of no help at all.
Comparing interspecies methods of communication?
It sounded completely lame even to him.
Uh-huh, Perkins said slowly, not convinced.
Did I do something wrong?
Nert asked unhappily.
No, Nert, you didn't do anything wrong, Jesse assured their liaison officer. You don't, we don't use that salute with officers.
Shauna cocked her head, hands on her hips.
What have you two idiots been teaching him?
Before Jesse or Dave could stop him, Nert did the up-yours gesture to Shauna.
Good job, Specialist Jarrett,
he said with grinning enthusiasm.
In spite of her better judgment, Major Perkins laughed, and so did Shauna.
Nert's goofy grin was so funny they couldn't help but laugh.
Nert, Shauna explained. That gesture does not mean good job. It is a... we would call it a rude gesture.
Nert was instantly crestfallen.
Dave and Jesse taught me wrong?
No, Nert.
Shauna gave the two men a scathing look.
They were teasing you, that's all. Sometimes humans tease a new member of a team as a way of saying that new person is accepted as part of the group. You understand?
Nert looked at his feet, miserable.
You do not like me?
He asked in a hurt voice. Jesse's panic went to DEFCON 1 when he saw the look Shauna was giving him. She regarded their young alien cadet with almost motherly affection, and Jesse had made Nert feel bad about himself.
Oh, God, Nert, I am so sorry. We didn't mean anything by it. We were just joking around, you know? Please forgive...
Ha!
Nert looked up, bouncing on the balls of his feet.
I got you, I got you!
He exulted, winking at Shauna. Jesse gasped, open-mouthed.
You son of a bitch. You son of a bitch. You did get me. That was a good one.
We are friends now?
Nert asked without the translator.
Oh, hell yes.
Jesse stuck out a hand to shake, and Dave did the same.
Welcome to the team, partner. You are going to fit in well with us, Dave assured the cadet.
Chapter 6
Holden? All right, I got it. There.
Jesse focused the Ruhar telescope that night and pressed the button to transmit the image to the Z-phones of Dave and Shauna. It was their last opportunity for a while to view the Ruhar battle group in orbit. The last few ships would soon be departing for an exercise outside the star system.
Whew!
Dave whistled.
This is a big MF-er.
Even with the image stabilization feature built into the telescope, The image was jumping around on the tablet screen. Ruhar, with their genetic enhancements, had finer control over their muscles. The telescope had not been built with the shaky hands of lowly humans in mind.
You think that is bigger than that Kristang battlecruiser we blew up with that first projector shot?
The, what was the name of that ship?
He who pushes aside